Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, good evening, everyone. This is Max Schumacher filling in for Drake Jones again. Hoping he'll call in tonight or we can get a hold of him. He's been very busy working on a couple independent projects, so hopefully we'll hear from him. But we have Roddy Johnson on the line. I'll go ahead and get him on. How's it going, Roddy?
Hey, doing good. Good to hear you. Hope you can hear me okay. Got a decent signal tonight anyway, so hopefully we'll have a good conversation and rock and roll.
Yeah, sounds good. All's good on this end. I've talked to a few listeners, so hopefully we'll be getting some calls here in a little bit. Excuse me, I'm starting to lose my voice. I went to a music festival and stuff this weekend, so I'm a little bit raspy sounding. Anyways, we'll jump right into it, and again, the number, if anyone wants to call in here, you can call at any time. Usually, we have the callers call after about the first 20 minutes or so. The number is 646-668-2170, and feel free to email us at drakejonesshow@gmail.com, and we can get a hold of your questions there. So, everyone, hopefully you're having a good weekend, but there's a lot of different things going on. The first thing I found in the news, and Rodney, feel free, I know you and I have talked, I'm sure there's things you've heard of and want to talk about as well, but one of the main questions we've got asked a lot on the show, and Drake in particular, I wanted to get a hold of him about this, and unfortunately he's not on the line, is whether or not a place can be considered haunted. And I know that's a kind of broad question, but what I mean by that is, can you actually claim a place to be haunted? So someone can say they saw things, you know, you could find pictures, you can have all the evidence in the world, but to actually have a place be considered haunted, for most people, it's hearsay. It's a lack of evidence, or it's a plethora of evidence, and, you know, you believe it, you don't believe it. But there's a big investigation going on right now here in New York. It's off the Hudson River, and the part of the area is called Nyack, I believe is how you say it, N-Y-A-C-K. And there's a house there that it's been going on for a while, but to make a long story short, the people who are listening right now, if you want to look this up, this is the website is onlyinyourstate.com, and if you just go to Google or Bing or whatever and type in "only in your state," it's New York legal haunted house, and there's a house there that these people had bought, and there had been so much paranormal activity and things that they had encountered that this is the first time ever that a house has been legally declared haunted, to where the people who had bought it are actually being paid now because they were not disclosed of the not necessarily history, but the activity, the history, the encounters they had afterwards. And they couldn't find anything that made it seem that this was, you know, the air conditioning breaking or whatever. They had a lot of bizarre experiences, and, you know, we can kind of go into them. But the house was owned by a family called the Ackley family. And like I said, this was in NYACK, and this is in New York. And it was originally a family in the 1900s who had purchased, you know, the original owners of the house. In the 1960s, a woman named Helen Ackley moved into the house with her family, and they didn't really realize what was going on there. You know, and especially, you know, nowadays you can go on any place you're going to move to, look up the history of it, what's going on, who's ever lived there. You know, you can do it for a lot of things. Well, back then, the record keeping and everything wasn't so on spot, and, you know, there's a lot more loopholes and ways people could not disclose things. So they moved in there, this family did, and the events that happened are, you know, pretty bizarre. One of the people who had lived in the home had an aneurysm. which is one thing. So the person who had originally died, they're not the family who moved in, had just died on the spot. And aneurysms are always kind of a subject for paranormal activity. Just for some reason, people think when you die instantly without, you know, any type of health cause, you can just go on and on with that. But everyone would always be woken up around the same time, every single family member. They lived there for a long time, and, you know, furniture moving, footsteps all throughout the house, slamming doors. This was before the time of video equipment where you could record all these things. But, you know, they ended up moving out, but they're one of the first families and the people who have owned the house since then to be awarded money and have a house legally deemed haunted. So it's kind of an interesting subject, but you can go look up the history of it. You know, there's no flying, murdering horribleness, but the fact that anyone who's lived there since then and the activity that has happened, it's been legally deemed a paranormal, you know, haunted house. Again, this is in NYACK, the Ackley family in New York, and you guys can look this up. The website I found the link on is in onlyinyourstate.com, but the first, from what I gather and what everyone's reporting, legally claimed haunted house in the United States. So we've talked about it before. Can you claim something's the most haunted? Well, I guess now, and we, you know, brought it up before, you can in real estate claim a place to be haunted if it's had activity, you know.
Right. One of the questions that I would ask about this, then, can you then prove that the people that had lived in the house before knew that? If you wanted to sell your house and you could then the people moved in there, then do some tests and then claim that it's haunted, that doesn't mean that you knew it was haunted. So that doesn't mean that you really are going to be held responsible for knowing that it was haunted. Now, if you had previous meetings and you had ghost hunters in there before, or you had talked to police, or you had called somebody in to investigate it beforehand, I could see you making a case. But what's going to happen now is you're going to have some sort of legal precedent trying to figure out what are the legalities and what is the criteria for calling a place or a house haunted. And so this is going to be a big thing. So can you just go in there and get one EVP spike and say, oh, this place is haunted, I want my money back? You know, or
no,
does it
no,
have
no.
To be the criteria?
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. No, keep going.
So, yeah, I mean, is there going to be – is the law going to have to come out with a whole book or a pages of criteria that have to be met before it can be declared haunted or otherwise? And if that's the case, that information is not actually ascertained until the new person has bought the house and then brings people in to do the investigation. So then how can you really hold the people that were living there before or sold you the house responsible? Because maybe it wasn't happening before when they were living there. Excuse me. So
right.
Could it be that, you know, that it's one of those kind of things? How are you going to prove that? Because could it be that the people brought the haunting with them and then are trying to blame the people before them? I can see that being
absolutely
a scenario where I don't see the courts being able to handle this kind of a court case, you know, in any realistic fashion. I don't see them being able to do that. Now, if they got a whole group of constituents together who all agreed on what are the criteria for a haunted place or a haunted house, I could see them making rules, but those rules would have to be set in concrete. They would have to be voted on. They would have to be put into law and into practice, and then that would have to be a state-by-state cases as well. So it would have to either go to that, and then they have to go to a higher Supreme Court if they wanted to make it a universal or a federal law or something like that. And so what's going to happen is you're going to have – because right now, normally, it's not the owner of the house. I mean, they're selling it, but it's the realtor who is getting the other people involved and who's actually selling the house. So they're going to be involved as well. And so is it going to be up to the realtor then? Because, you know, they have to go through and do all these inspections. So now are we going to have a ghost inspection every time you want to sell anybody's house? Because it's going to be law, and we have to, you know, no one's going to want to try to buy a house that is not checked out thoroughly first for these things. And we've also talked to Joe and Aaron before about what type of, you know, EMF readings are safe. And we know that electrical boxes and frayed wires and bad wiring and maybe even how the structure is built, all these things lend themselves to, you know, weird anomalies in the EMF detectors. And so, you know, how are they going to really quantify whether or not it's a real haunting or it's just something wrong with the electrical system? And then again, there are safe levels of EMF, and then there's ones that apparently can be, you know, harmful or make people ill or feel bad or whatever. So I think, you know, it's one of those things that I don't see this really fleshing itself out as a legal battle, because I don't know how you would create any parameters for this situation. You would actually have to have the court system come out with a standardized list of things and criteria that have to be met before you could call it haunted. Now, I don't know if they're working on this or not, but certainly the lawyers on the other side are going to be trying to debunk it and trying to say that this is, you know, all speculation. And so legally, I think it's just a giant hairball of a mess, if you ask me, because, you know, as, you know, maybe amateur hunters and, you know, using the equipment ourselves, we can kind of understand how they work. But they can also be, as we well know, set off, you know, prematurely or by other means other than a true, you know, apparition or a haunting or something like that. So, you know, are they going to really be holding people to the fire when it comes to explaining or having a team of investigators go in there? And so who's going to pay for that? Is the homeowner going to have to pay for that team of investigators to come in and do a sweep of the house and do an actual real investigation? And then that costs money. And so are they going to have to spend that money up front in order to sell their house and all these kind of things? And if so, then does there have to be any prerequisite happenings in the house in order for that to be the law? So I see all these potential problems with this whole case. And, you know, it becomes another question of owning and selling. If you bought the house from somebody else and you didn't know that it was haunted and you lived there for 10 years and then you try to go around and sell the house, and nothing happened while you were there, and then the people who bought the house find out it's haunted and then want to get their money back or don't want to go through with the contract, is that up to you then to fulfill that, or is that the previous owner's problem? So, you know, and then if that's the case, and it is the owner's or the previous owner's problem, then how do you know that it's really the house that's the problem, or is it what the house is built upon, like the poltergeist thing, like, you know, they build these subdivisions on ancient, you know, Indian burial grounds or some, you know, structure underground that's actually causing weird things to happen. But they're a really, I don't see them being able to legally put any kind of real parameters on this. Now, maybe in the future they can hack this out somehow, but I don't see it.
The thing is, you know, this has been an ongoing case. This one's the most famous. You know, they kind of have been going on since the 70s, so this is actually in textbooks now. And the case itself is, and I am horrible with names. If you've ever listened to the show, I'm infamous. I cannot pronounce the name to save my life. So Stombovsky versus Ackley, that is Stombovsky versus Ackley, Ackley. And that's now been referred to officially as the Ghostbusters ruling. And what's funny is the attorneys were actually quoting the Ghostbusters in this. And this has been going on for 30 years, but as of this year now, there's been, you know, officially paperwork filed and people being paid and all that to come from it. And it's been considered the, for lack of a better term, the first legally declared haunted house. So... And, you know, we'll keep an eye on it and see. And, again, that's an NYACK, NYACK. God, I am bad with names, Rodney. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing these to anyone. And the Ackley family, and the case one more time for anyone listening, is Stombovsky versus Ackley. That's Stombovsky versus Ackley, Ackley. So check that out, everyone. Kind of an interesting case. You know, we've had people call before and ask is this a haunted house? How do you know? And everything Rodney just brought up, wonderful, great questions. The thing is, if we had the answers or if we knew, we don't know. Obviously, this has been a case where court fees have been paid for a long time because you are dealing with a family, if you read the whole story, that moved there and actually was dealing with, you know, a house that had legitimate, you know, history of people dying in there and paranormal activity and people moving out, and was not disclosed that information. And, you know, they weren't even from the area, so they had to deal with all of these things. So there was a time now that they're finally getting paid, and, you know, all the lawsuits and everything, court cases took a long time. But anyways, on to the next subject. And, again, for anyone who wants to call in, I know we usually take callers a little bit later, but, you know, we have we're scheduled for an hour and a half here tonight, so we have extra time. So feel free to call in, 646-668-2170. The next part of the show I want to get to is a question I was actually texted by a friend of mine. And we've talked about it similar to the last subject before, but what is it from people who – and the term of this, a non-believer, is the way he worded it to me. That's not what I like to use, but if you never did believe in paranormal activity before, or you're kind of skeptical, what is it that made you guys, or anyone listening? I know Rodney and I will have our own takes, and you know, if he wants to share that, he can, and I certainly will share mine. But that made you less skeptical, more believing that there's possibly some type of paranormal activity that can be measurable, and you can see it, maybe not see it, but it can be captured on film. What is it experience-wise, or was it experience someone else had? What is it that made you think that there's something on the other side, not necessarily that there's nothing there? And, you know, I don't mean that in a religion sense for anyone listening. We've had people before think that we're trying to get at that there's a by afterlife or something that we're saying that's, you know, God or religion. Simply getting at, you know, if anyone out there, I know ourselves had our own experiences. Have you ever had anything, Rodney? I'll let you go first, then I'll share my own experience. What was it that made you think that there's more out there than the naked eye can see, and that there's possibly some type of paranormal activity that we can measure and see, and that there is something on the other side?
Yeah, you know, I chalk it up to a generality because, I mean, there's been a few instances where we've been doing some things, and I've had, you know, I say a negative temperature drop, and that's been the biggest in my book of a real, you know, quantifiable anomaly that's happened, you know, to us before that has made me think that something might be going on. But in general, like I said, I think I would like to generalize it and just say life itself is kind of paranormal if you think about it. You know, we have a way of understanding the universe as human beings, and you know, is that something that separates us from kind of the rest of the animal world? And I just prefer to believe in that kind of stuff because I think it's a more exciting. I don't want to put myself in a box and just say, oh well, the world is just us and the material things that are around us, and nothing else is true.
Hey, I'm getting a little feedback. You're cutting out just a little bit.
Okay. Well, it could be that, yeah, I mean, I'm not for sure. If,
there you go. No, that's perfect. Now I can hear you.
Losing some signal or whatever, but I really think that that's part of our whole life as human beings, that we're sort of paranormal creatures in ourselves because we have a capacity in our brain to understand all of the, what I would refer to as physics. I mean, we understand that there's laws of the universe, there's laws of gravity, and there's these laws that can be measured and tested and remeasured. And once we've done that, we realize that, oh, the physical world is pretty well set, and we understand that. But in everybody's lives and throughout history, we see anomalies that don't fit that description and that go beyond and outside of the real physical world that we see and the measurable world that we see. And these have been documented throughout history. And so I just prefer to believe in a more fantastical world Bigfoots and ghosts and aliens and all this other stuff simply because we have an imagination to think that this is a possibility. And I would rather believe that anything is possible, and rather than thinking that nothing is possible except for the measurable physics of our own existence. And so, I chalk it up to a philosophical discussion in those terms, because that's where it really lies. Science is trying to prove it still, and there's all these ghost hunter shows that, are putting out this information and whatnot. And then not only do I, might refer to some ghost hunting show, but I really don't. I refer back to ancient Indian legends and, all kinds of mythology and petroglyphs and all these other things throughout history. So we know that for thousands of years, people have thought that this is true. So it's not just something that's just popped up in the 20th century and that we think it's true because we've got cameras now and people want to be scared and they watch these hunter shows. So, for me, it's a more paranormal world than it is a normal world, in my opinion. And that's my
absolutely
take.
No, I wasn't trying to interrupt you right there. You said a lot of things I actually really agreed with, so I was writing them down as I was agreeing with you verbally, so I wasn't trying to interrupt you or anything. But, for me personally, and, I didn't get a response personally, what was their experience from this question from the emailer, but my own experience, I have never had, if you listen to some of the ghost shows, Zach Bagans, what's it, Ghost Hunters, Slayers, ghost wrestlers, whatever they do to them. Everyone's got their own take that, they saw this, they saw that. I've never seen anything with my naked eye. I have never really honestly had a horrifying experience. My take had, when I first started calling it the show back when Drake still did it, and we'll see if he ever comes back, but we talked a little bit about dreams, and my take came from dreams, and I always wondered if dreams could be considered paranormal or not, because subconsciously you could be asleep and thinking about things, and you're not necessarily seeing them with your naked eye, you're not recording anything. But yeah, certainly we've all had our take of dreams where we wake up and we're terrified or thought we saw something, and why am I thinking about this? Why, for me, I was having vivid dreams related to things in my life or the distant past. So that kind of opened my eyes to the idea that maybe I am not necessarily in control totally of my thoughts and my projection and what I see in the world. And, spending more time in the country areas and the rural areas where I, kind of grew up and had the ability to go into old buildings and set up equipment and take pictures. That was something I was very blessed to be able to do because I got to also experience, and that's the thing, the orb debate. You can say this is dust. You can say this is that. Well, who knows? But part of the fun is sitting down and saying, what's going on with these pictures? What did I hear with this? Is that a train? Well, that's a train. Is that this? Is that this? Trying out new equipment on top of having these dreams and all that. No, I've never had a demon in a house slash me or do some horrible thing or throw a beer bottle at me. I may have, drank so much beer I thought that happened, but I don't know that I've ever had an experience that's really made me think that, wow, there's one gajillion percent something on the other side because that happened. But the accumulation of all the experiences I've had, and in particular starting with dreams, is what led me into believing that there is something on the other side and that that's a paranormal field. That I know you and I have talked, Rodney, and other guests, that that is something to talk about because it's not always, oh, look, I can see that. Oh, something jumped out. We experience things a lot, and people talk about it all the time. We can see things and have experiences and not even remember having them. And if that's going on, who's to say I haven't had these experiences, seeing things with my naked eye and forgot them? But especially with dreams is where I've got my ability to kind of look a little bit more past what I thought and kind of think that there maybe is something on the other side. And that's not me condoning or saying everyone go look in places or definitely believe in everything. That's just my particular take. And yeah, you know, everyone has their own thing that kind of brought them into thinking about it. You could say the same thing about a lot of different subjects. You know, we've talked about Bigfoot. We've talked about, oh God, I don't even want to dive into it because I could go into another 45-minute conversation. But my point being, everything you had said, Ronnie, I really do agree with. The one that I didn't hear you had say was dreams, because for that matter, for me, that was kind of my stepping stone to thinking a little bit outside the box. And we can get back to this conversation. We've had a caller on the line for about 30 seconds, so I want to get to them and see what they want to have to say. So let's go ahead and get them on the air.
Hey, guys.
And hi, how you doing? How's it going?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing
great. I was catching a little bit of the beginning of the show and kind of made me think of a question. I was wondering, do you think in terms of being able to witness something paranormal, in terms of like a haunting, that anyone could be capable of experiencing that? Or do you think it involves some kind of entry to that? You know, we've talked about on the show Ouija boards before, and a lot of times it seems like when there's a true haunting that comes around, it's something that triggers that. Do you think that it could happen to any normal person like you and I, or do you think it kind of only happens to certain people that kind of go down a certain road?
No, that's a great question, because, you know, why do people go out of their way to be ghost hunters? And why do people are completely opposite of that and say, oh, no, it's not real, and they don't even bother to check into any information whatsoever? So there is a definite division in the people that agree and don't agree. And so, you know, it's a very good question, because it leads to other things. And what we know from history is that apparently, maybe it's just a coincidence or something, but throughout history, people have proven sort of that children, because they have a completely open mind and are not already ingrained in society and materialism, that they have an easier time viewing these things. And it could be that just some adults are still more childlike in that aspect of having an open mind. We also know
you
that
know, I've always heard that as well.
Yeah, that dogs and cats could possibly also be in the realm of that as well, because we know that certain animals have these other sensory perceptions. Now, we know also that birds and other things like this, they use the magnetics of the earth to guide themselves. Well, we don't even have that capability. So why is it that they would have that and somehow have something in their brain that allows them to detect something that we cannot, that we have to have instruments, physical instruments, material things in order to figure these things out? And so the children and the dogs and the cat theory kind of lends itself to this idea that it all depends on how open your mind is. And if your mind is open to all possibilities, and this goes back to religion and stuff as well, it's almost like the proverbial, you know, quote in, you know, like in the Bible or something, where it talks about that if you believe it, it's possible. And you can move a mountain if you only understood that it was possible and that you could do it. This kind of idea that if you have an open enough mind that you could possibly create the thing and make it happen. So
absolutely
right.
You know how many times I've tried to tell myself that before trying to walk on the water of a pool?
Right. Well, this gets into, of course, precognition and telekinesis and ESP and telepathy and all these other things. Why do some people claim to be able to do these things, maybe on a minute scale, but still be able to, you know, you got such things as psychics and mediums and all these people out there who claim to have a way to actually contact the other side. And that's, of course, the name of the show, What's on the Other Side. And that's what we usually talk about. So, yeah, great question. I think that it really comes down to life experience and whether or not you are simply looking at the material and not understanding everything around us. I mean, we breathe air, we don't even understand it. We're living on the earth that we don't even understand, flying through space at a million miles an hour, orbiting around a giant star, you know, we can't even explain our own existence, and yet we think that we know it all. You know what I mean? Like, and I really think that that's really a mistake. And so, and also they've done a lot of studies with identical twins. They've done studies with identical twins and put them in separate locations and even different states and separate rooms, and they would do something to one of the children or one of the people, and the other person would have a similar effect or know what's going on. And I myself, when I was younger, I've had several dreams that actually a week later or whatever kind of came true. And that, for me, kind of sort of solidified this idea
right.
that there's something else going on. And so that's kind of my take, is that it really depends on how open your mind is. And I'm not saying that just people that should just sit around and watch ghost hunting shows all day to try to figure themselves out.
Right.
But I really think that we should not necessarily, though, look at it as a bad thing. We shouldn't go around going, oh, it's everything that's haunted and everything that's a ghost or everything that's an apparition or everything that's paranormal is evil. It's not. And so just as many paranormal evil things that there are just as many paranormal good things.
That's a great
and
point.
So that's my take.
Well, yeah, you know, if I can jump in real quick, to sum up kind of what I think, you know, getting back to your question about whether or not there's something about if people can see, you know, or have the ability to see these paranormal things, it could be there's too many different areas people approach it from. If it's hereditary or if it's, you know, you've seen the movie like The Sixth Sense where, oh, you know, you're just born with this magic gift. It doesn't necessarily have to be a gift. It doesn't necessarily have to be something evil or bad. And it doesn't have to be seeing something. You know, there's a lot of times, you know, we associate it, I can't remember what we call it, the funhouse effect is, I believe, what we used. And it can be associated with a lot, but that effect of when you know, you're in the basement alone and you just feel something. That's not seeing something. That's not witnessing a ghost. But, hey, I'm alone in a basement and the lights are off. And even if you're familiar with the place, that's, you know, your body feeling something. And you can also be raised in an area,
sure.
whether it's just the geographical location or it's your family that, you know, hereditarily you're going to be believing that there's ghosts. You know, if you grew up right next to the Amityville Whorehouse, you're probably going to have a family that believes a lot of stuff, or maybe they don't believe it and you're just going to be exposed to it. But for me personally, my family's always believed in, you know, there being other things. And I always was taught to kind of just question things. So I think that was kind of the way that everything brought me to looking at things from a different perspective and on the other side. But I don't want to go into the whole depths of people talking about, you know, you can see the energies and the 11th color of the sun. And I made that part up. That's fun to say. But just some of the strange things people dive into, and I don't mean to call it strange. I will never make fun of anyone for believing anything for the most part. But there's people out there that honestly have some beliefs that, you know, we can all see certain things. And if we, you know, shape our mind to do that, then we can. I personally don't believe that. I don't think that we as humans really do have the ability with the naked eye, unless we alter our minds extremely or have some type of, you know, physiological disorder. I just don't think that we're going to be able to just walk down the street and start seeing Civil War soldiers and Native Americans running by. That's my personal
right.
opinion.
And that's what I think was mostly wondering, is if it takes a certain person, a certain scenario to experience that, or if it's something that would be as random, you know, that anyone could. I think I agree with you guys.
Yeah, and I think I could also steer you to other things, like have you ever seen the movie Altered States? This is an idea where the guy went out of his way to get in a deprivation tank and take peyote and do all these drugs to try to get to this other realm, because he saw that the ancient Indian people and the Aztecs and all these other people, the indigenous American people, were practicing these things, the whole witch doctor, the medicine man, all these things. Now, it doesn't, even when you have an entire Indian tribe of several thousand Indians, even with that many people, there was probably only still one or two or three of the people in that tribe that were considered shamans or considered medicine men or considered that. So you know, I think it's just one of those things that you're going to find maybe, you know, it's 10 out of 1,000, or if it's, 50 out of 100 or something like that. But from what I gather, people throughout history have been going out of their way to use mind-altering drugs to try to get to that point where they can feel something different. Now, there's all kinds of people that experimented with marijuana or acid or shrooms or peyote and all these other kind of things. These are all categorized as psychotropic drugs that can actually, you know, make you see tracers and see things that aren't really there. So, you know,
Spin-off question on that. Yeah. If you go about it with the right intentions, and let's say maybe you're trying to contact somebody that was, you know, close to you, and so you go about, maybe you try a deprivation tank or whatever it may be, and you go about that, do you think even with the right intentions, you open up a portal for potential negative things to come to you as well? Or do you think if you're focused on solely one case, let's say it's, you know, contacting a deceased parent, you're kind of safe doing that? Or do you think it opens up a whole world of a lot of negative as well?
Well, I think that depends on who you ask.
Good question.
Because if you ask the religious groups, they will say that any kind of contact with the other side is a bad thing because you're potentially opening yourself up, and anybody that does contact you is going to be a trickster, and it's just going to be some sort of devil in disguise, and it's going to use that to try to deceive you. And so, but in other cases, there's plenty of people out there that do say that, like I said, that there's just as much good out there as there is evil, and that you can contact, say, a loved one or a dead relative in some form or fashion. And it's a great question. I don't put that out of the realm of possibilities because even in our own minds, I think what's going on here is that our minds are a lot more powerful than we give them credit for, because we only use a certain percentage of our brain. And so could it be that we still have these unlocked dormant abilities that we haven't been given, but God has just decided not to let us have these abilities yet because we're babes in the universe and we're not yet ready for it. You know what I mean? So,
what's weird about that is you would think that over time, if there was more capacity to be gained, the size of the brain would gain with it rather than having the excess size that's not being utilized to grow into.
Right. Isn't that weird? Yeah, it's a great point. Right, because why would we, because this is my, you know, argument of, you know, nature versus nurture. Not only that, but this is my argument for creation versus evolution. Okay, evolution gives creatures exactly what they need to do what they need to do. All the other animals on the earth, they all have exactly what they need to do what they need to do. They don't have extra. Why do we have extra? You know,
right.
If we came from monkeys, then why are there still monkeys? Why do we have webbing between our fingers and monkeys don't? You know, so there's all these questions that come up when you open up these questions like this, because it gets to the point where, yes, we have a capacity and ability far beyond what we can understand at this point. So we have more of a brain capacity than what we use. And why would that be the case? And so there's a whole other realm out there. So basically, it was almost like we were designed to become better and to become more than we are. And so I really think maybe some people are just a little further along than others, but I really, that's my take on that. I really think that there is no precedent in anywhere that I can find in evolution in regular animal creatures that suggests that the creation and our evolution is giving, you know, creatures more than what they need. And so we're definitely unique in that situation.
Yeah, I think if I can go ahead and jump in, yeah, I think we definitely are unique in that situation. You had jumped in, you had mentioned altered states and, you know, taking peyote and different things. So if you kind of stop and you break down, what is it that makes us see these things? You know, if you want to call it altered states, if you want to call it, the sixth sense or being in tune with, paranormal activity, there's a million different things that could make us see it. And if we have all this extra brain power activity that we're not utilizing. Why is that? And, you know, could it be that the Anunnaki or whoever, if you put religion aside, that they don't want us to, or whoever it could possibly be, to utilize that brain activity? Or if they do, they would just want us to know that we have it there, you know. The technology we have is so much further than we can use our brain. You know, we have technology that can use, you know, we talk about teleportation, we talk about telekinesis, we talk about all these different subjects. You know, we can talk to someone at any point, whenever we want, at any time in the world, through our cell phones right in front of us now, FaceTiming and seeing them live. And,
right.
You know, could it be that the technology is just, you know, it's so advanced now. They want us to know, whoever it could be, that, yeah, this is a possibility, but they don't want us to have it yet. And for now, this is the only way that we could be. And also, you have to jump into the fact, what if we are utilizing this, extra brain power, is that not for our own good? Because, you know, if you look at humanity as a whole now, we don't even do things well.
Very good point.
Look at the world. Look at the state of the world now. So if we all have extra brain power, and, you know, the average guy who instead everything that makes him happy is waking up and getting a pizza and, you know, watching the World Series and, you know, doing whatever, having an extra burnt, that's fine. But if it's, you know, that's all that makes you happy is eating a burnt pizza or whatever, cool. But there's going to become a point where if you had extra brain power, you're going to start questioning extra things. You're going to start saying, what if this happened? What if this happened? What if that? And that's not maybe being smart. That's not being questioning. It could be a million different things. Why do we have this brain power that we're not utilizing? Why are we only using such a portion of our brain? And
one question that makes me think of is, do we know with other species what capacity they're utilizing, like with monkeys and whatnot? Are they utilizing the full capacity and one not? Or because I wonder if it's, you know, almost like evolutionary, we have this extra capacity to grow into, and you give it thousands of years more, maybe some people will be able to fully utilize that whole capacity, like that with a computer. You know, nowadays you fill up your hard drive space real fast, but you know, back in the day it kind of took a little more to do so. So I kind of wonder if over time we'll grow into that, or how that will go.
Right, and you notice how humanity has got to the point where we're trying to do this artificially with nanotechnology.
Right.
We're trying to bridge that gap with nanotechnology and trying to merge our own material technology with ourselves to make ourselves better, when actually our own analog, anatomy is already better than that. You know what I mean? It's sort of strange to think that, yeah, why weren't we already developed to have telepathy? Because there would be a lot less misunderstanding if we could just understand each other. You know, we have so many times in our lives and within each other that we misunderstand each other, and that creates huge problems throughout.
We're talking about something that we may someday attain. It's quite possible
right.
We had that and lost it. We talked about the Tower of Babel story. We talked about that once on the show. I wonder if maybe we did have that where we could all communicate easily in a certain way, and then, you know, maybe that's the Tower of Babel. We lost that ability, and then we all had to come up with unique ways to create languages. You never
right.
know. It might be we're working backwards.
Right, because it's like the confounding of the languages. You know. Like, yeah, why would they do that? Why would they purposely, whoever it might be, make sure everybody can't understand each other? Because when they did understand each other, they were trying to reach high. They were doing things that were at the time apparently beyond themselves and weren't really any good for them. But like, yeah, it seems to me that if we had telepathy and we could understand each other's pain and emotional state, that the Earth would just, you know, at least humanity would operate a much smoother. So that's a great question, and it's one of those kind of things that opens up a whole Pandora's box of other avenues of, like, why are we trying to do this artificially? And so is there a way? Because if you look at shamans, if you look at, like, Gandhi, and you look at Hinduism and all these other people who will just sit cross-legged and eat a bowl of rice and be perfectly happy, that's kind of what Max was alluding to. Like, as humanity, we don't really need all this stuff in order to be happy. The only thing we really need to be happy is contentment and some friendship. Those really are the only things that, you know, we necessarily need to be happy. So why are we always striving then to do all these other things that supposedly we think are going to make us happy? Like, just, you know, I mean, just that you take women's lib, for example, and, you know, this idea that, you know, they didn't used to have half as much as they do now as far as their power and as far as what they're able to do and as far as how much clout they have in society. And so it's really strange that we're at this precipice that we realize finally, wait a minute, women are just as capable as men are. And we know this, and we've always known this, but why did it take us this long to get to a certain point of realizing this? But at the same time, you have all these women out there who all want to put on a suit and tie and wear shoulder pads and work in the man's business world, and then they realize that that's not necessarily what makes them happy. Because women are very good at being compassionate, caring creatures. If you abandon that and you want to be in a role, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be happy. So we have all these cases now where we have all these different avenues of thinking, and women are now very much involved in all aspects of society and in life and in the workforce. And so it's thrown us into a different sort of paradigm in our own world, because it's never really been like that before. So we're now getting to that point where we're realizing that we have more potential than what we utilize. And yet at the same time, as a society and the things that we put out, and if you turn on this television lately, you will just see that it's not about making people smarter. It's not about making people better. It's not about making things easier. It's about making people entertained. And what is entertainment? Usually it's somebody beating somebody else up, or it's somebody doing something horrible to somebody, or it's some stupid shock and awe game show or something. You know what I mean? So it's kind of weird that our own technology is not helping us. It's reverting us back to a sort of a stupefied state almost. It's kind of strange that we don't use our best technology for learning. We simply use it for entertainment. And that's really concerning to me as far as expanding humanity and expanding people's minds. We could have done that with TV a long time ago, and yet we haven't. And yet what we have Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and we have, you know, all these ridiculous shows who just, you know, these, you know, want to date a millionaire and all this kind of stuff. So why do we go out of our way to make ourselves stupid is beyond me, but that's where I see ourselves heading. I don't see ourselves expanding our own minds. I see ourselves getting to a point where we're becoming less and less cognitive, less and less critical thinking, and less able to deal with reality, because we're so ingrained in this, just as long as we can buy stuff and as long as we can be entertained, we don't question anything. We don't care about what other people are doing. We just kind of drudge along and continue on.
Right.
So, I really think that it's strange that we're at the same time that we've got technology now that can make us superior beings and make us hear better and see better and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, the majority of the population is not under that constraint. They're actually being gone the other way. So it's really weird.
Speaking of entertainment, I had one last question I thought I'd leave you guys with. So what do you think of the World Series? What's going to happen? Do you think there is validity to the curse with the Cubs? And I know there's a curse with the Indians as well.
Well,
do you think there's anything real about that?
Well, for me personally, you know, I'd love to ask Drake. I've been texting him, seeing if he'll call in.
Yeah, that's
but,
a good point. He would do a good one.
Yeah, at this point, we'll see if he ever shows back up on this planet. But the Cubs... the curse is, to begin with, is like it's a multi-layer curse. So we talk about curse all the time on the show, but if you're dealing with, like we talked about the statue, I don't know, I believe you had called in or maybe you'd listened to that episode a couple of weeks ago where we talked about with Joe and Aaron, the statue from the Catskills in New York where they had this curse. And so it's one thing to mess with an artifact or to, you know, for lack of a better term, piss on someone's grave or, you know, build a house on an Indian burial ground and have some type of curse. But it's another thing to have a sports team and then you say, well, first it's the goat, and then you say it's the was it Bartman, the guy who tried to interfere with the Cubs catching that ball. And then he was like, basically the new Bill Buckner.
Guy.
And then you talk about Bill Buckner.
He has a
multi-layered
curse.
And I grew up my whole life playing baseball. And, Drake is an incredible baseball encyclopedia. You know, that guy knows literally everything. You can talk about a player's stats from 4 years ago. He knows how many home runs, this, that, and the other thing. I am not that good. But as far as it being a legitimate curse, it's almost like we were talking about, if you're listening to the beginning of the program, is something considered a legitimate haunted house, which we've been asked a lot.
Right.
Oh, well, this, you know,
so that's
house in New York
is a good connection,
legally haunted
a good
house.
Connection
though.
To make.
I do not believe the Cubs are going to win just because, you know,
yeah,
they're down a game already, or two
good,
games
good,
are down.
Good.
Is it 3-1? I can't remember. I think they have to win the next three games or two games or whatever it is. Again, I wish Drake were here because I feel like we'd be flooded with quality baseball information. So,
right.
As far as the curse goes, do I think it's legitimate?
Well, the Cubs are actually up right now.
At the same time, I think
you're right. It is 3-1.
Yeah, I think if you implant something in someone's head, you know, whether it's a professional athlete, it's a person, you know, who's a ghost hunter, it's a person who's a skydiver. You know, you take a bunch of skydivers or you know, wingsuit people to a place that has the most accidents for people skydiving and tell them this is the place where, oh, it's cursed. Well, if something happens, then it's cursed. But if something doesn't happen, then it's not. My point being that, yes, the Cubs have gone through a long, long series. That, you know, I grew up a large portion of my life in Kansas City, and they said that the Kansas City Royals were cursed for however many years, and they won the World Series. It's a sports game. I don't think that there's any form of curse or entity. And if you talk about curses, you have to look at it from multiple angles. You can look at it from religion. You can look at it from demonic or some type of standpoint like that. Is this a curse, someone trying to do this, or is this just like a taboo type bad luck, don't talk about it kind of thing, you know? I just think that the whole sports curses things can be a little more related to the fact that times change, the people, it's not the same people. You know, it's one thing to talk about a curse if every single person who lives in the same plot of land that doesn't move has horrible, god-awful experiences. But it's one thing to say, hey, this group of individuals who are all professional athletes throughout, you know, X number of years have all not won the magical game that we've named and set rules to make you get eliminated, and that means you're cursed because this, that, and the other thing. Sports to me, it's kind of like that, you know. You could easily say that Floyd Mayweather in boxing, or you could say Rocky Marciano is a cursed person because no one's ever defeated them. In reality, does that just mean they're a better boxer or they're mismatched or who knows? I think sports are something that I've never really enjoyed the curse aspect from as much as I have just watching the game from it. You know, it makes it much more exciting when there's some type of supposed curse behind it. And this is not me being skeptical, but I do think that if there were a curse placed, that it doesn't make sense that you could place a curse on a franchise itself that may or may not move locations at some point, stadiums at some point, all the managers, all the players, all the umpires, everyone's dead, gone, all the fans, everyone's dead and gone from where the curse was placed. To me, that is not my envision or perspective of a curse, but that's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, let me throw a couple of things out there to you guys. I know you guys are, you know, kind of had played baseball and are into baseball and stuff, and I used to play baseball quite a bit myself. But let me throw a few things out there. Now, if you notice, the players themselves are superstitious. And sometimes when they have a losing streak, like all the players won't shave for a week or something, and then all of a sudden they'll start winning again. It's all a weird mindset, because a lot of these players are very superstitious as well. And so they'll go out and they'll carry a little lucky rabbit spoon, or they won't, you know, wear a certain pair of socks, or they won't wash their socks, or they'll grow their mustache, or whatever it is. You notice that? How it's sort of strange how the players themselves believe in this sort of luck, sort of,
right,
you know, the rabbit's foot type of a deal. So let me throw something out there. when it comes to the World Series, this is something I think different than possibly the regular season, simply because it's like the Super Bowl or anything else. It's like, you know, this is a billion-dollar industry, okay? Whenever you talk about that kind of money, you're talking about certain incentives. And so think about this. Think about the cities and how much money and how much prestige comes into those cities when the World Series comes to their city. And so the precedent to make sure that they play as many games as they can, because it's going to generate that much more, millions and millions of more dollars. When was the last time you saw two teams go to the World Series and then the first team just get blown out and that's it? No, you've seen these games go on and on and on. Pretty much usually they stretch it out to 5 or 7 games because, you're talking about billions of dollars. And so you talk about this kind of money, you're talking about, hey, it only takes one umpire or one pitcher or one hitter to change the course of the game. And if you want to fake an error or you want to, you know, throw an easy pitch so somebody can hit it out of the ballpark, that can easily be done. And I'm not saying it is, but when you're talking about billions of dollars and, you know, huge perks for the city, when your team wins the – I mean, I know I was living here when the Royals won the World Series both times. And let me tell you, the entire city and the entire state and the entire surrounding states all went yahoo, and all this money poured in and all this stuff, and everyone was happy and all this. So there's much more at stake than simply this guy pitching the ball and some guy hitting it and getting on base. So maybe the superstition is actually a manipulation based off of money. And this is a possibility in my mind because, like I said, whenever you make this kind of money, and it's a game. It's a game, for crying out loud, that kids play, okay? That's what it really is.
Oh, I agree.
And so could it be that the curse is simply just somebody that's manipulating the game? Like I said, I mean, one pitcher could simply throw a guy an easy strike right down the middle and know that he's going to hit a home run off of it, because they can do that all day long if you get the right pitch. Most baseball players, especially professionals in the major leagues, can easily hit a home run if the guy pitching is going to throw them the ball and they know where they're going to throw it and they can, you know, swing as hard as they can and all that. So that's kind of my thing. I'm not going to say there's a curse or not, because I really haven't really heard anything about these curses of the Cubs. I don't follow baseball that much. But all I know is it's very strange that, you know, 9/11 happened, suddenly the Patriots win the Super Bowl. When the hurricane wipes out the Southern coast, suddenly the Saints win the Super Bowl. It's really strange. I'm just saying that this is a possibility that the curse could actually be money manipulation.
Right.
No, that's a good point.
You know, so I think you're going to see it go all the games it can go. I think you're going to see it go to at least 5 games, 6 games, whatever it takes, because the more games played, the more people buy tickets, the more paraphernalia is sold, the more money comes into the city. So, I mean, you're talking about a child's game that for kids is now a full-blown, basically make or break a state or a team.
In my opinion, I do agree with you. It can go off into so many other subjects, though, into the economy and all the other things. And I don't want to take up too much time going on another road, and I'm not quite sure it's blinking at me. Jim, are you still there with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it was blinking at me. I wasn't sure if you were still on the air. My wonderful computer is just working great with me.
So. That's all I had for you guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Awesome. Happy Sunday.
You guys too?
Yeah, great question.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, appreciate it. I'll stay listening.
Right on.
All right, man. Have a good one. All right. Well, yeah, that was Jim from still don't know where he's at in Florida. I've been meaning to ask him that, especially because I'm down here myself. But, always good to bring up different subjects. And, again, for anyone listening, we like to emphasize, we'll talk about anything, I wasn't trying to emphasize the fact when I was bringing that up to Rodney about the economy or, you know, whatever. We will talk about if you think that there's something going on. If anything, we'd love to talk about it. It doesn't have to be ghosts or UFOs or anything. Email us at drakejonesshow@gmail.com or call us at 646-668-2170. We would love to take your call and talk to you guys. So, anyways, we will wait and see. No callers on the line right now. Again, 646-668-2170 for anyone who wants to call in and talk about things. But in the spirit of, I guess, what, it's 2 hours away, my time, 3 hours away or so, I guess, in your time zone, Rodney, of Halloween, I wanted to ask our callers and everyone in particular what, you know, just because it's the spirit of Halloween, man. I mean, what's the creepiest, scariest, you know, experience you've had recently or that you can recall? A lot of people we've asked this question or heard it before. They talk about something when they were 4 years old, which is great. But in my opinion, most of the terrifying experiences are when you're consciously able to think about things and, you know, register them and all that. So if you want to go first, Rodney, you know, what is it, you know, recently, any, you know, at any time in your life, it's fine, that has made you feel the most unsettled, creeped out, you know, terrified of, you know, of your life. It doesn't have to be a murder situation or anything like that, but just in the Halloween spirit.
Right. You know what? I mean, nothing really creeps me out too much anymore since I'm a little bit older now, and I don't really, you know, I've kind of been there, seen there, done that kind of thing. But, you know, it's weird because I could be walking around. I could probably walk around in the middle of the woods at night in the middle of nowhere and not be scared. But if I'm in a group, if I'm in a huge group of people and there's thousands of people around, that's when I get freaked out, you know, because of just, I don't know what it is, but I'm not a type of person that likes large crowds. And I'm not for sure why that is or anything. But, you know, as far as creepy things go, they actually had on earlier, of course, you know, cable's been, you know, fraught with Halloween, you know, horror movies and stuff like that. But back to this clown thing. I watched, they had the Killer Clowns from Outer Space on. Sort of a B-rated, cheesy kind of a movie, you know.
Oh, God, that's one of my favorites.
They did a great job with the makeup on those clowns. I mean, they actually, when I first saw that when I was a kid, it scared me. I mean, I was like, wow, I was thinking about that for weeks after. Because, you know, I was kind of younger when I saw it, and I was like, wow, this idea that there's these weird clowns, but they're not really clowns, but, you know, they just go around and terrorize all these people, and it's kind of amazing that it's almost kind of like what's been going on lately, and it's kind of great that we haven't heard any recent news about that, that, you know, knock on wood, that's kind of gone by the wayside, but I've never been a huge fan of clowns and a huge fan of large crowds. Those are the only, you know, I mean, as far as freaking me out goes, I've never been totally blown away as in running for my life screaming or anything. So I've never actually had that, the proverbial, I was, you know, scared out of my wits kind of thing. Now I can psych myself out and be scared of things that I know aren't there. Like, have you ever walked up a large flight of stairs and then you get this weird feeling that, oh God, but there's something behind me, you know, it's dark. And you run up the stairs because you don't want somebody to grab you by the foot. You know what I mean? I
have
myself
that
with
the bed, you know, when you put your feet off the bed, when I, you know, I can't remember what movie it was I saw, but when I put my feet off the bed and kind of sit there on my bed, some movie, someone grabs your ankles and pulls you into the bed. I never do it anymore. I saw it when I was 10 years old. I, you know, for my whole life, I've never done it since then.
Right, I've done that myself. I found myself when I was younger sleeping, and I would, my right or left foot would go off the side of the bed and be out of the covers. Like, the covers have always been the proverbial security blanket. You know what I mean? Like, if you're under the covers,
absolutely,
Nothing can hurt you. But if you stick your leg out, then it's vulnerable. You know what I mean? Like, it's all in our minds. But yet, at the same time, when darkness comes, and when you're walking up that dark stairwell, and you get that weird, creepy feeling behind you, you want to run up those stairs because you don't want to beyond those stairs anymore. You know, it's really weird. And so I feel that if anything, in my whole life, I probably creep myself out more simply by, little things like that, little quirky things that just kind of plague, our mind when it comes to being scared. I really think that we can do it to ourselves fairly easily. And so, I chalk up my scariest moments to my own brain, playing tricks on me or assuming something's there, and because nobody else is around and it's dark, then you get that heightened sense of, and then you get the adrenaline flowing, and then the mind starts to, go in circles, and then you're like, I've never had a killer clown jump out of me or a ghostly apparition right in front of me or an alien come down and land in front of me. Although I have seen UFOs and I have, seen other things. I've seen a ball lightning. I've seen UFOs. I've seen other things that make me think that there's more going on than what we think. So I don't really, I chalk that up to more of an interest more than I do a scary thing. So good question, but I really don't have one particular moment that just freaked me out so much that I still remember it today. The one thing that did scare me when I was a kid, when I was probably 8, 9 years old, we went and saw the movie Grizzly. And this was a movie back in the 70s that came out about this huge Kodiak bear that went around terrorizing this campground and stuff and mauling all these people. And my parents kind of took us to this movie because it was, some of this scary horror movie. And I guess we were actually too young to actually see it, but they took us anyway. And I was freaked out for like 2 weeks after that. I mean, didn't want to go to the bathroom by myself. And it's like, here's a giant bear and we're inside the house and I'm scared. So, it's sort of weird. I mean, that movie really did a good job on me. And I thought it was a great movie, though, once I watched it later and I was an adult and understood, okay. But one of the best, scariest movies I ever saw is called Grizzly. And like the killer clowns from outer space, they did such a good job on the makeup and how these clowns looked in their mouth and their teeth and everything that it was like, wow, yeah, that's a really, really scary thing. And why do we go out of our way to do that? I mean, it's so strange. You don't see any other creatures going out of their way to scare themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I was always one of those kind of guys who like to hide around the corner and go boo and scare somebody when they came around the corner. And we like to scare ourselves all the time. So why do we do that? Why do we?
Right.
Why does humanity like to scare ourselves? Why do we go out of our way to watch a horror movie? It just seems so strange to me.
Well, it's the adrenaline, man. It's the whatever the scientific deferrin. I am not a rocket scientist, believe it or not. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think it's the adrenaline. It's we like to be scared. It's the shock and awe. We can't turn away from it. It's the violence. I'm a huge mixed martial arts, boxing, everything fan. I've competed in various things in my own life, and it's not that I like violence, and it's not that I like to watch people get hurt. I just, there's something about seeing what's unnormal, I think, is what you can equate paranormal to, that makes people so interested in saying, I want to see that. You could have the greatest ghost story in the world and tell someone it, and unless they see it for themselves, they're going to be like, I have all these questions. And we do have a caller on the line, so I'm going to cut what I'm saying short, and I want to get to them. So who is on the line? I apologize. We're getting ready to click you on in just 1 second. But, my own personal story that I had that made me the original question that was brought up, I had an experience what really freaked me out, and it didn't necessarily make me, I guess, whatever the term you want to use is, me freaked out or think that it's paranormal or that it's ghosts or that I'm seeing things. But I would have been 17 years old, maybe 18 years old. I swear to God, I'm not making on my life. I swear I'm not making a single thing up. So strike me with lightning if I'm making this up. But I was driving home from a buddy of mine. He lived out in an area that, this is out in the Kansas, Missouri area that's being developed probably still now. And I don't want to disclose anyone's information of where. So His name was Travis, and nice area and all that where he lived, but it was a solid 5-10 minute drive into what was more or less the developed suburbs area where people would live and all that. You know, they were developing neighborhoods out there, but this would have been a Saturday, maybe Friday night. I'm driving back from where he had lived towards where I lived at the time, and I still lived with my parents. So I'm driving, and on the left-hand side of the road, I just see the infamous, I guess they call them hazards or emergency lights. I see those going on in a field. And this is out in an area that doesn't have street lights or anything, so, you know, you'll see things real well if they're lit up. They don't blend in so well. And I just see two sets of those, and I kind of really didn't think much of it, but I'm looking at it. And this is in the area where these lights I'm seeing are from, there's no houses. This is where they've only developed the streets that they're building these lots and houses on. So I see these lights, and I'm like, why are these two lights or whatever? So I kind of just look, and I notice one of the cars is up in an area that, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, way curbed up, and the other one's kind of in the field. So I drive through there just to kind of see, and I swear on my life, my parents' lives, I'm not making a single thing up. There's a large group of people, probably 6 or 7 of them, and they're all scattered, not moving throughout the field. And they're laying there, and I didn't know at this point if this was like drinking and driving or someone having a party, and they're all passed out and laying there. But no one's moving. No one's standing up. Hazards are on both the car. There's beer cans everywhere, and people are laying there. So I, you know, 17-year-old me, I'm just kind of like, oh, my God, this is weird. I'd never really seen very many things like that in my time. So I called my buddy Travis and told him to come towards this way. I pulled to the edge of the neighborhood. And granted, this is not a short street. You have to drive, you know, a good little distance, but you can still see everything. We can still see the hazard lights and everything. So he starts driving over. I called my mom, my dad. I was like, should I call 911? Should I, you know, maybe, you know, I didn't want to get a bunch of kids in trouble for having a party in the field behind where their parents live or whatever. So I also didn't know if they were hurt. So as I drove by too, I was also shouting at them. No one was responding to me. I was really just kind of freaked out. So I drove a little bit away from it and just called my friend for help. You know, called my parents. What should I do? Well, all of a sudden the hazard lights go off. Nothing's there anymore. We go back there. We drive there. They're gone. And you can also understand where the area is at. If I were to disclose it, there's a lot of, you know, people have, you know, 20-acre lots and all that, but, you know, they either drove off or something happened. But for me, that was the experience, the most creepy, unsettling kind of where it was. I don't know if I saw, like, an apparition of a group of people. I never heard a truck or group or people start. You didn't see tire ruts or anything. The beer cans and all that weren't there. They either were freaked out that there were cops were coming or I, you know, experienced something. And the other thing is I was the only one who saw it. I was kind of a little sleep deprived at the time. You know, they call it senioritis or whatever you want to call it. It was more or less I was pretending my life was awful because I was a senior in high school and pretending I was stressed. In reality, I just wasn't sleeping well. But I don't know if that was a sleep deprivation thing or what it was, but that was the most unsettling, creepy. I to this day, I don't have an explanation. My friend showed up. You know, we looked around. There was no one there. I'm glad I didn't call the police or, you know, anyone to come out because there would have been nothing there. But that, for me, was the biggest thing. And I want to go ahead and get this caller on the line because I kept him on for a few minutes. So we'll go ahead and get to him. And hi, how's it going?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm just going to remain unnamed for a little bit. I got a question. I don't know who to ask because, like, it's a weird question, and nobody takes it seriously anyways when I ask it. But I've got a friend that's a biological engineer, and he told me I can either become a werewolf or a vampire. I have to choose. And I've just been thinking about it for, like, the last week. I don't know which one to be. So, you know, because they both have pros and cons, and I was just hoping maybe you guys could sort a couple things out. I mean, I would like to be able to fly. That's cool. I'd also like to have super strength of a werewolf, but I don't know which one's better. You got any suggestions for me? I know that's crazy. No one takes me serious.
No, I do. You came to the right spot. You're not alone. what I'd like to say first off, and then I'll let Rodney jump in, is this is not a good question. This is a great question, and I do appreciate it. So I'd say in a fight to the death, if we're dealing with that, you know, are we talking about, is this some type of catwalk competition? Are we showing off our skills, our muscles? Are we actually fighting to the death? Because in a fight
no,
to the death.
No, what I'm saying is
I actually
get to become one.
Right. Okay. Well, so, I immediately conclude that, you know, we're jumping to fighting. Well, if you get to become one, I'd go with werewolf. They're feral. They're vicious. You know, you may or may not have several diseases that I you could just not in that way, but you could just impose on other people. I really do think that that would be my option. I'd go with the werewolf. Also, Dollar Shave Club's an option out there now. They got laser hair removal. People may not even know you're a werewolf.
I know. It's just I don't know how I'm going to handle that one time of the month. I've seen that in person. It's kind of stressful. But being a werewolf it just seems cool. I would have superpowers. I guess I'd be strong and crazy. But at the same time, you know, I like wearing silver. So, I don't know.
You said vampire was your option?
Yeah, vampire. You know, they can wear silver and everything, but
at the same time.
I like going out during the daytime.
Vampire was ruined when Twilight, that series, came out because now everyone's going to think you're sparkling. Everyone's going to want you to be a werewolf. So my option, I'd go with werewolf. There's not anything, you know, you don't need blood. It's, you know, that's cool. Daylight's actually kind of fun. There's a lot of cool things you can do. Nighttime's great and everything, but I 100%. What a vampire's got, they can bite people and, you know, drink blood and all that stuff. 1,000% I'm going with the werewolf.
My buddy said I'd be super fast. I can fly. Girls would automatically be attracted to me if I'm a vampire. I also get really sharp teeth, and I drink blood. So, I mean, those sound cool, but I don't know.
Well, we also got to factor in a few other things here. Both of these things, like look to them, both of these items are brought about not by your own volition. But if you look at the true folklore of these things, werewolves and vampires, these are a result of being bit either by a vampire or by a werewolf. So it's almost like if you want to choose between one of them being bit by a vampire or bit by a werewolf, simply the vampire is going to be a lot less horrific of a bite. But the idea is that the vampire, and I'm not so for sure about the folklore on werewolves goes, but we know that the vampire's lifespan is extremely extended. So you will be able to view humanity for possibly a few thousand years. And I don't know that that's the case with the werewolf. So if you want to resemble and you want to maintain any humanity to you whatsoever, then I would go with
it depends.
The vampire, because you still walk on two legs, you still, like, say, have relationships with people, you live in a house, you know, all those things are still the same. You could possibly live for thousands of years, but, you know.
But I'd have to watch people that I love die because I live so long. And what happens if I get really hungry and I want to eat them?
If I can jump
in, you know, that doesn't
happen
to a werewolf.
Here's what I was going to say, my last point. It depends which version of each you're talking about, in my opinion. You know, you need to look at all the different, you know, vampire, werewolf scenario/movies/ literature that where you're getting it from, or maybe it's your own idea. If you're talking, I was joking about Twilight, you know, the werewolves in the Twilight books were made to go kill these vampires. That, you know, they were the predator. They're going to go eat the beautiful vampires that sparkled in the sun. If you talk about, if you've ever seen the show True Blood, the vampires are badass in that. They're way superior to the werewolves in everything. You know, it's completely flip-flopped. You know, they're not even scared of werewolves. They, you know, beat the shit out of them. They're not, a werewolf, they're not cared about it at all. You watch, like, you know, Penny Dreadful or anything like that, same thing. Benicio del Toro or whoever had made the original Dracula, I guess Gary Oldman made another Dracula, the vampires are far superior when they talked about werewolves and gargoyles and everything. It depends on every single different scenario you're talking about. if you had like a list, like a pro con list, like, you know, here's your upgrades, here's what you're going to get, you're good to go. But in my opinion, like you had said, you know, Lindsay, why not just be a werewolf? You're going to be just eating a lot of good dead people and, you know, whatever else they do. I'm going with werewolf, man, and I support you. And I'm Max Schumacher. I approve this message.
See, that's the thing, man. I mean, he's going to literally just inject me with his blood, and then it's going to happen. So I just wonder which one, and it's really hard. And I know werewolf has pros and vampires has pros, and they all have their cons as well. But I'm kind of gearing towards vampire because I know I can live a little bit longer. And the fact that I'm pretty fast, too, which is cool. And it's maybe less hard to kill me. I guess you could, like, push me outside during the daytime. And the other thing about being a werewolf is I couldn't control when I turned. Like, if there's a full moon, it's getting crazy. So every time there's a full moon, like, even my buddy's having a party or something, I can't show up and be the guy in the room that becomes a werewolf, you know?
Right.
Like,
no.
That, in my opinion, that's a big move right there. Just mentioned right there, because when you're talking about a vampire, you're still talking about retaining your cognitive, very smart, very articulate ways. When you turn into a werewolf, then you all of a sudden are basically reduced to having a werewolf mind, and you're running around just eating stuff. You're no longer that sophisticated creature of the night. You are a beast, a simple creature of just eat and kill, and you're not sophisticated as a vampire. A vampire can also change his appearance as well and change his bodily shape as well, too. So I wouldn't rule that out. So I wouldn't, you know, pull it off to the side and say, I want to be a werewolf because I'm faster or stronger. But if you want to stay sophisticated and you want to stay in the human form, but be able to transform at will instead of just at a full moon, that's a plus to me, where you could actually at will turn into something that you could fly away. I mean, no one's going to be able to kill you if you could either, because they also have abilities to actually seduce people. So if somebody looks you in the eye, you could then basically take over their mind and have them do your bidding if they give you the time of day. If they invite you in, then they're yours. And so you maintain that sophistication, you maintain your human form, and as well as being able to shapeshift and take over people's minds and on all these other things. So I really think that, you know, like I said, once you reduce yourself to a werewolf, you're gonna be susceptible to the moon's phases, and you're gonna be reduced to a lower form, in my opinion.
Well, a lower form that could
kick
anybody's butt.
Well, I actually also want to point out that the politically correct statement is called a displaced canine. That's what we're calling werewolves now. So,
what about lycanthrope?
They have not officially ruled on a statement, but displaced canine is now what we're calling werewolves. We don't want to offend anyone. There is a werewolf and a vampire thing that goes very deep, very rooted in the country. Many people have died, vampires and werewolves alike. So we'll continue to follow the subject. And again, we only have a few minutes left. I don't want to cut anyone off.
No, that's fine, man. I'm going to go ahead. I'm just going to become a vampire, I think, you know. So next time I call in, if you got to be doing this show a little bit later for me, I think, then. But, yeah, I'm going to be a vamp.
Right.
Thank you, guys.
It's getting dark at 7 o'clock.
Well, again, make sure you get a good name if you're a vampire. You need a solid name. I watch a lot of Star Wars movies or spinoffs. I usually copy most of their names because they're original and they make me laugh.
All right. I was just going to be vamp, but I guess I'll think about that, too.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, too.
Yeah, you don't want to get any bad, you know, like little takeoffs of your name. You don't want anybody calling you Van Damp or anything like that. So you
better not, because I'll bite him in the neck.
Yeah, you want
I would just set a record. I would be the first vampire named Kyle. I would just call yourself Kyle, and that, you know, that who's going to know you're a vampire?
Only the people that call me Vamp.
Yeah, Once Bitten was a good comedy back in the day. But I would go with the vampire simply because I think there's more benefits and more cons than being a werewolf. That's my take.
All right, well, I won't take up any more time. I know the show's almost over, but I just had to have some third opinion on that. I don't know. No one else will really take me seriously. So thanks for talking. I'll see you later. Next time I see you, I'll be a vampire.
You also want to, if you want to research it, go ahead and get the Fiend Folio or the Advanced D&D Monster Manual 1 or 2 and go ahead and look up their hit dice and all their attributes, and you'll find that the vampire is superior.
Well, I'm still holding my ground like the Alamo, and I'm gonna hold with the werewolf. And you know, Rodney and I will disagree from time to time, but maybe that's the beauty of life. But that was a very interesting question, and that was very comic-like. I like that. We only have a couple minutes left, so I'm just going to go ahead and sorry to interrupt anyone. I guess, well, we did have another caller, but they hung up, I guess, when I said that there was no time left. But anyone who was on the line or wanted to call in, I apologize. We were just doing a quick Sunday show. Everyone's got work and stuff tomorrow, so we'll get back to the program next time. Feel free to email us or ask any questions at drakejonesshow@gmail.com. DrakeJonesShow@gmail.com. Sorry, I had to spell that out in my own head for a second. DrakeJonesShow@gmail.com, 646-668-2170. If you guys want to jot that down, that's the number, and it does not change. So thank you so much, anyone who called in. And, again, I think the werewolf's going to win. So, Rodney, I only got about 30, 40 seconds left, but let you go ahead and sign off for us.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, let's remember his voice because we don't want to piss him off if he does. I mean, either one of those creatures is a formidable foe, so I wouldn't want to be on his bad side, that's for sure. So anyway, I think we all probably have and when it comes to vampires and things like that, you don't even know when you've been bitten. So it's kind of one of those things that I think if a vampire is feeding on you, you don't really know it. You might feel weak once in a while or something like that, but they can come and go invisibly and all this stuff. So, you're not going to see them anyway. So, anyway, yeah, good show. I think we covered every topic under the sun, I think. So all good things, and we'll be on Friday, I guess, next week. Same time, same bat time. So sounds good to me.
We may get on again soon. We got about 10 seconds, but we're going to have some social media, Twitter, Facebook, all that to make it easier to follow for everyone. So thank you for tuning in. We're going to be having more shows coming up and more volume of them. Everyone have a good night.